windy day in Honolulu, looking out beyond the hills, memories and times of heartache, blaze of lilies, daffodils. Here I lighted like a bird upon the bright blue water shore, with my hope and with my nightmares, praying I could swim and soar.
Dark dreams, haunted sunlit days, while I drank down rum and hope, burning dreams and crimson lovers, dancing on a thin tightrope.
That is the title cut from the latest album from an American classic, Grammy Award-winning singer, songwriter, activist, an Academy Award-winning documentary film director as well. The great Judy Collins appears at the Waldo Theater tomorrow night. We had a chance to talk about the new album, the tour, and more as Bruce Pratt and I chatted with Judy earlier today.
Hi there. How are you doing?
I am wonderful. How are you this morning?
Very well. Thanks so much.
Well, it's wonderful to hear your voice again. Thank you so much for coming back on with us. Very excited for the show tomorrow night at the Waldo Theater. What will people see when they get a chance to see you on this tour?
Well, a lot of the new songs from my brand new album, Spellbound, which is all my own songs, plus some of the classic Judy Collins songs, Amazing Grace, Someday Soon, that sort of thing.
The new album, by the way, is just terrific. Right from the get-go, the title song, Spellbound, it weaves such a fabulous tale and pulls you right in.
Oh, great. I love it. I'm so excited that I was finally able to write all these songs myself.
I have to ask, is there a true story behind Hell on Wheels?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
And what was the story?
It happened just as it says in the song, that I was working at a lodge in the Rocky Mountains when I was 17. I had just gotten my driver's permit, and I borrowed a car, Chevy convertible, 52 Chevy convertible, and I took off to see a friend of mine. I was working in Grand Lake at a mountain lodge, and I went off to Estes Park to see a friend of mine who was working at another lodge. And coming back, I almost ran into these two little kids sitting in the dirt. And I, as I say in the song, it was hell on wheels, and I could have caused a lot of havoc if I hadn't run into the fence instead of the kids.
Wow. And I love the song about Thomas Merton. What a wonderful song.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, I'm a great devotee of Thomas Merton. I'm not a Catholic, but I love his writing, and I found out that some gentlemen who investigate this sort of thing discovered that he was actually murdered in Thailand. Mm. It was covered up for how many years? He died in 68, so it was a long period of covering up. They wrote a book called The Martyrdom of Thomas Merton not too long ago, and it was a shock. But anyway, I wrote it in a way as a mystery story.
I'm just curious, at this point in your career, you've had so many successful albums. Was there any hesitation in putting your own compositions out there?
Oh, no. I decided that the poetry that I was writing, I would have to figure out if there were songs in those poems. And so I took them to the piano and began to see how far they could go with making songs. And I was very happy with what I got.
Well, you should be.
I got a lot of other songs that are not on the album. They'll come out soon somewhere.
Well, I love the fact that you continue to do new things and take on new challenges. I was thinking that perhaps more than anyone I can think of, you have render the notion of musical genres pretty obsolete, from what we would call folk songs to pop hits, doing Sondheim. The wonderful album you did a few years ago, Winter Stories, which got you a number one album on the bluegrass charts. Who would have expected that?
Yeah, I was lucky. That was an album I made with a group called the Chatham County Line and a singer from Norway named Jonas Field. And we had a wonderful time making that album. And we were pleasantly surprised when, you know, Billboard called me when I made the number one slot in the bluegrass category. They were very excited. They said, this is your very first number one in all the years we've... And then I said to the guy who called me, I said, well, I've had an awful lot of other numbers, too, you know.
We're talking with Judy Collins here on Downtown. Go ahead, Bruce.
Yeah, hi, Judy. Bruce Pratt. I wanted to ask you a question. My friend Garnet Rogers may not come down off the cloud he's on, having had a chance to play with you not too long ago.
Oh, I love Garnet Rogers. What a sweetheart.
Yeah, he's one
and
of the
brilliant,
best.
Brilliant singer, songwriter, performer. I just adore him. I'm so lucky that I get to work with him once in a while.
Well, Garner was pretty excited about it, too. And he mentioned something that you just brought up a moment ago about composing at the piano. He told me you still practice Rachmaninoff and other classical players, which I can understand to keep your chops up. But does that help with your songwriting, too?
Well, I always wind up writing the songs at the piano. I think I wrote one song at the guitar in all these years. So that's where I can see what I'm doing. And I get going at the piano and I find out whether it's a song or not.
When you take a song that someone else has written, let's say Send in the Clowns, which was tremendously successful for you. Now, if I remember the story right, Stephen Sondheim wrote that tailored to Glynis Johns, who was not known as a great singer. But how do you then take it and change your interpretation and really make it your own?
I just turn it into a Judy Collins song. That's all I know.
Well, I saw the show on Broadway and when I was a bit younger. And when I first heard you sing that on record, I was just blown away. I thought it's a great song, but it's a way better song now. And I think it was just the clarity and the power of the way you delivered it. That stuck with me a long time.
I was lucky to find it. And I thank, in retrospect, I thank Leonard Cohen again, because his best friend, one of his best friends from his growing up and his whole life, she was probably the last person to see him alive. Nancy Bacall became my friend in 1966, and in 1973, she called me up and said, I'm sending you over a copy of the new Sondheim musical, Little Night Music, and she said, there's a song on there that you've got to sing, and it was Send in the Clowns. So, in a way, it was also from Leonard, so I've always been very grateful to Leonard for a lot of things.
You took Joni's Both Sides Now and made it into a wonderful hit. And when you talk about timeless recordings, that sounds as fresh now as it did back then. And I think to a few years ago. It's such a cinematic song anyway. And I don't know if you ever watched the series Mad Men, but they used it in an episode of that. And it was so incredibly powerful. There was no dialogue. It was simply your recording of Both Sides Now.
I was really amazed when that happened. I was surprised. I was not a Mad Men fan. I didn't watch it, but I certainly did after it. Both Sides Now was in it. I hope Joni saw it. Maybe she'll write me a letter yet.
Well, you know, Rich has mentioned some songs from way back. I had a chance to talk with Jack Elliott the other day, and he said, you'd be sure to say hi to Judy. So I'm saying hi from Jack.
I love Jack.
Oh, and he loves you, too. Let me tell you, he loves you, too. But what Ramblin' Jack's
angel, I adore him.
Yeah, me too. I've been a lot of my youth, some would say, misspent with Jack. But one of the things that I think about is how I always have the sense when you perform, when you write, when you record, that you're always, part of you is back in those days. It's always back when music first became really, really important to you. Is that pretty accurate?
Oh, yes. And because I am a storyteller as well as a singer, I transplant us back and forth between 1955, when I found the guitar, and put aside the piano for a little while, and into my youth. I mean, I constantly tell stories about the intermingling and the intertwining of my life with music, with the stories that I heard and the songs that I learned, and how magical that is. You know, last night in New York, I got together with my old friend Peter Yarrow, and we had a reminiscence of lots of things. We've known each other since 1961, when we met up in at Gertie's Folk City in New York City, and I was the headliner, and Peter was Arlo Guthrie was my opener. And so Peter and I often talk about those early years when I first met Yarrow, when he had just started to sing with Mary. And he used to say to me, now, if it doesn't work out with Mary, keep your schedule clear.
You know, one of the things that I find so fascinating about people that had success in that era was that there's a great genuine affection to this day among those people. And, you know, sometimes the music business gets painted with an ugly brush, backstabbing and all this kind of stuff. But I found that Jack and Van Ronk and Eric Anderson, all the people that I worked with later, all really had a genuine affection for one another. Is that accurate, or is that just nostalgia?
It's very accurate with one exception, and I won't mention the name.
Well, that's okay. I can understand that, and I think I might have a guess, but I won't even try.
Oh, there you do.
Well,
it's probably just jealousy. I think it's just jealousy and misbehavior, and the idea that you know, saying nasty things about other people is something that was not popular in our group. But it was very outstanding with the one person I'm thinking of. And I do think it was jealousy. I think I have to forgive that person and say, look, human nature is flawed, as we know.
Apart from your music, you have done so much wonderful work as an activist through the years. How did you develop that sense of activism and then getting involved in making the world a better place?
Well, you know, my father was very much of an activist, and he taught us at the dinner table every night to discuss what was going on in the world and to try to make a difference by helping out, you know, and creating, hopefully, understanding in the world, and also trying to right the wrongs that we saw in the world. So when the 60s came along, I was completely ready to take part in that. And you know, Peter and I last night, and my husband and his wife and our dinner companion, we talked about it a lot. I mean, how the world has changed and what we can do about it. And you know, he has this foundation against bullying. He's had a lot of time doing that and working on that particular issue. And of course, bullying, we've seen bullying come to fruition in terms of our political life. And, you know, certain people create the atmosphere and let it happen and rally around it. And it's not a good thing, especially for young kids.
Do you see that sense of responsibility among artists as much today as you did in the 60s and 70s?
Oh, absolutely. I think from the get-go, and also things like We Are the World, which was transformative, and all of the artists who pay attention to what's going on in the world and try to make a difference. I mean, I think it's the result of absorbing the ideas that came out of Woody Guthrie and Pete Seeger's mouths and lives.
Well, Judy, it's so wonderful to have the chance to speak with you again. It's so great to have new Judy Collins music out there, and I know it's going to be a wonderful show tomorrow night at the Waldo Theater. Thank you so much for making time for us today.
Thank you, and give my love to Garnet.
I will do that. I will talk to him today later.
Good. Much love. Thanks so much.